Welcome to AB Testing Podcast, your modern testing podcast. Your hosts, Alan and Brent, will be here to guide you through topics on testing, leadership, agile, and anything else that comes to mind. Now, on with the show.
Hey everyone, I'm Alan. No, I'm not. From now on, I will only be referred to as Spy. I do not answer to my government name anymore. Please don't use me that name. I will correct you. Brent isn't here. There's no B. So we have Banny Thought, and Bondreas. Actually, Andreas Vorming and Danny Thought are here to talk about stuff with me because I felt like doing a podcast. Welcome. Say a quick little intro. Say hi, everybody, and something interesting. Go, Danny, you're up.
Hi, I'm Danny. This is my second time appearing on this stream, but the first time on the actual podcast, so that's very exciting for me.
Glad to have you here, Andreas.
Yeah, Global Warming is a nickname on the Slack, and it's all my second time here. We had like a 3-4-3 or something, and I hope I don't embarrass myself like last time.
I embarrass myself every single day. So if this is your first episode, this is weird because this is our first episode in maybe close to 6 months. I can't count that high. I was gone for 4.5 months, took a long walk, had some fun, met some cool people, saw a lot of animals. That's pretty much it. Got back about a month ago.
There's a map over your shoulder. It looks intriguing.
Yeah, there's a map over my shoulder of the Pacific Crest Trail. It's been there forever. It was there for 6 months before I told my last company I was leaving. They just never, nobody ever asked. And then I can say this now. So I think I might have been clear about this on the last, I can't remember. It's the week to week is gone from the last podcast, but because it was 6 months ago. My last job wasn't a good fit for me. I'm unemployed right now, so that's worse, I guess. But one of the things I figured out on the trail was that for my next role, I want a job that I really like and I feel like I'm valued, that I would have fun at and do what I'm best at. What I'm best at is building engaged teams and people who like to grow their career, understanding how that works, and building good software. And my last gig, they kind of didn't care about either. And when I left that job, my blood pressure was high, like it was when I left Microsoft. And now I went to get a physical a month ago after I got back. And like my health is like the best it's ever been in my life. My blood pressure is like ridiculously low and good. So I'm going to keep this healthy living going, even if I can't get up and walk 20 miles every day. So
yeah, you're looking really good right now, Alan.
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I will tell you, and this is probably just going to be a whole story about trail stuff, but we'll get some leadership and software stuff in there too. But I've done a lot of 100-mile hikes before I did the 2,600-mile hike. And one thing I really figured out is that that time, like somebody told me this once, I'll tell a story here. Said the legs are for walking, the heart is for beating blood, the lungs are for air, and the brain is for thinking. And when you're just walking and you let the brain wander and think, you figure shit out and it's great. And really got a chance. Like, I thought about the job stuff a lot, thought about myself a lot. The way I put it, if you've been following my Substack posts, a plug here, angerweasel.substack.com. Go read my stuff, subscribe. It's free. And I just stripped away all the BS out of my brain. So it's like this this zen. Oh, I mentioned Spy is my trail name on the PCT. I got so used to being called Spy. When people use my other name, my government name, it sounds weird. So I am Spy.
And this is a normal occasion that people give themselves trail names.
They don't give yourself a trail name. Somebody gives you a trail name. And you can reject it, and they may stick. Or they may not stick. So Spy stuck. A wonderful couple, Yeti and Spout from Philadelphia, gave me the trail name Spy, and it stuck. And that's who I was. But somewhere in Oregon, I kind of, like, the pieces fell into place, and then I became Zen Spy. So now I'm like, I'm just like doing the Zen thing, doing the Spy stuff. And being called Spy is cool because when you bust out of the woods someplace after, things you do in the woods off the trail, somebody says like to me, hey, where'd you come from? I said, doing spy stuff. I can't tell you. So it's really great. So anyway,
the secret is revealed.
That's what I've been up to. I've been back. I've been kind of looking for jobs. I'm being selective because, like I said, I want to do some work that matters, work that I care about. I have enough savings. I can take my time in doing that. But I feel like I do want to work some more someplace and make some things happen. So I'm going to poke around, see what happens. It's a weird time of the year to be looking for jobs. Not a lot of people are hiring in Q4, but I will keep my eyes open, my ears open, activate the network, and see what I can find.
An interview as for an executive level job as it is for management or programmer and that sort of thing?
I think so. I don't know because I'm looking for VP level jobs still, and I've had a recruiter screen so far. I haven't really applied for that many jobs, but it's definitely a different vibe than it was a couple years ago. This is not a humble brag or anything, but I haven't applied for a job since I started at Microsoft many, many years ago.
That's the worst way to get a job.
They talked to me about a job that I was hired. Oh yeah, we need your resume. So, okay. and when I went to NBC again, the recruiter contacted me. I'm sort of used to having recruiters and they're just not doing it anymore. Like I would get a recruiter ping every week, like, hey, I want to talk about this. I say, oh, no, not right now. Not the best time. But there's none of that. I'm actually doing the legwork myself and actually spending time tweaking my resume. It's weird. Oh. It's good. It's fun.
Oh, it's not fun.
But also, my general routine is I get up in the morning, I feed the dog, have a little coffee, walk down to the gym, work out, stop and play pickleball on the way home with the retirees. Come back home, look at a few jobs, apply. Maybe usually I find like one a day ish, probably on average I want to apply to. I poke around. I think about like blog posts or newsletter articles I want to write, do some reading, take another walk with the dog. It's kind of a good life, but, I am starting to miss working as every day goes by. So coming along.
So hanging out with those. Sorry, go ahead.
But at least you're privileged in that way that you have like that you can take your time, that you can like figure out the stuff, you can write stuff, get like I mean there might be some blogs and LinkedIn posts, all of that get recruiters to you, maybe, right?
I hope so. I hope that my inner hope is that someone I put my Substack in my resume and it's on LinkedIn. I would love to get hired by a place that comes to me. It's like, hey, I like what you wrote. I want to see how you apply this to a team. Like my HR screen, my recruiter screen last week, they really had no idea who I was. It's like, are you still working someplace? Blah, blah, blah. I was like, hey, man, pay attention. Do your homework. Like I did mine. You do yours. Is that fair? Am I asking too much?
You're asking more than you're going to get.
Then I don't care. So
I don't know, the kind of stuff that you say that you're best at and that you want to do should be like the first thing on your CV, right? That everybody should be able to, like, this should be the headline, right? I build engaged teams.
Yeah.
So hanging out with those pickleball players, are they trying to draw you into their ranks and join the retirees?
Oh no, I'm in their group chat now. They are. I'm hanging out with them. They are funny. So they're ruthless. I'm getting good enough now where some of the retirees will cheat a little, and I don't care. I'm just there to have fun and get some exercise. But like, it's not a bad life. It's not a bad life.
What kind of cheating happens in pickleball?
Oh, like something's obviously in. They go, oh, out, or just stuff like that. Like or little things. I don't care. Or, it doesn't matter. I don't care. I just want to have fun. So I don't care. So, yeah. So what's exciting going on in your world, Danny?
I actually did hear from a recruiter. I'm seeing more of that the last several months. I mean, still not much, but it's a thing that's starting to happen again. I'm still on the lookout to fill up my schedule more. I did a little tiny bit of consulting with a startup, which was really cool. And I'd like to do more of that. I even put it on my LinkedIn because the recruiter said, well, if you're doing that thing, why don't I see that thing? Well, it wasn't much of a thing, but sure. So yeah, looking for, I'd love to get my consulting going again. It would be a different kind of consulting than what I did before. More, you know, development focused than testing exclusively. If a fun full-time thing comes along, then I'll consider that too.
Yeah. I'm going to say one thing about that. I don't hear the same thing from you, Andreas, but one, I thought about going and doing some consulting myself. I'm kind of tired of paying my own health insurance, but I guess I can keep doing that. The problem is the people I could help probably aren't listening to the podcast. If you want me to go help your team learn how to deliver with fewer testers or get rid of dedicated test teams, I've done that so many times. I can help you figure that out, and I can do it in a way that improves velocity and quality. But those people are not the people listening to the podcast. Those are the people that hate the podcast on principle. So I got to work on how to find those people, because I could do that. I could do that. And I could do that job while going to the gym and playing pickleball with retirees and helping them out. That'd be great. Yeah. So I'll figure that out.
You know, when I was consulting, I got at least half of my business from, like you were talking about, from writing. And people just would Google, I want help. I want to learn how to do this and this. And Google would say, oh, here, read this thing that Danny wrote. And then I would get a consulting gig out of it. But I guess they're not Googling for podcasts, or they're not clicking on the podcast link. So the
maybe,
media
but actually
matters.
When they're Googling, they're getting an AI answer now. So I don't know.
Oh, if and they're not
the,
saying
the transcripts are like indexed. Sure. Why not? Like,
sure.
It doesn't say I learned this from Alan and Brent. So
no, it doesn't. And I'll figure it out, because it isn't just that I do. That's just something I could do that's easy. I'm good at organizational change. If you want to take your team from A to B, I'm really good at that. One thing I struggled with my last job is they wanted to go from A to A. A was fine. Like, that's fine, whatever. But that's not for me. I don't want to take a team from A to A. Andreas, what have you been up to lately? What are you doing?
But just helping my boss a bit with like his Pack and Panic, the online e-commerce startup thingy. Otherwise, like, I've been working as a freelancer before, basically, and the freelance market is like quite dead here in Germany. Like, nothing is happening. Like, the hourly rates are dropping very hard. Everybody's scared. Everybody's like looking for like permanent employment now. Okay, not everybody, but I'm maybe on the low key looking for permanent employment somewhere, but nothing.
All fixed. These people and nobody's working.
Yeah, I don't know, but at least like when on the full-time employment side of things, at least my skills seem to be at least like still looked after. So yeah, let's see. Still a crazy, scary time.
It's a weird time. Yeah, I'm not worried yet. I don't think I'm worried. If I was out of money and, which I'm not yet, I am spending a little bit more than I'd like to of my savings. I really, really want to be selective and find a place that I like. I'm probably not going to work a lot longer. I'm not going to work till I'm 65. I'm
the
not
pickleball
work
is calling.
Pickleball is calling, but I do want to work a little more, because I think I'm good at what I do and I want to find some places to do it, but I'm not going to go someplace that where I'll just be a cog in a machine. I'm better if I can go drive a culture change and take your team from good to great, or from great to awesome, or from awesome to elite. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go find that. I don't know where it is. I'll figure it out. So not too worried. That's where I'm at.
Why do you have time? Like, maybe as a suggestion, try to like get the transcripts index somehow, so if anybody's looking for culture change and like how to deal with that, they find
let
you
me I'm gonna take see if I can figure out how to do that, because the transcripts I think should be, since all the episodes are in Spotify now, they do a little live transcript. I might be able to figure this out.
Make it Googleable.
A little note, it'd be interesting, but I don't know if, and here's, I don't know if I'm a recruiter, am I going to Google to find candidates? No, I have 10,000 people applying for every single job. I don't know if I'm going to Google to look for candidates. I don't know how people... I need to think about this some more. And listeners, all three of you... Oh, shit, two are on the episode. The other listener out there, if you want to give me ideas on how to make myself more discoverable, like there are, I guarantee you right now, there are half a dozen or more companies who need someone exactly like me. They don't know it yet, or maybe they do, but if they did, how would they find me? That's what I got to figure out. So anyway, that's my plan. If I can subject change, I want to, and Danny, especially, I want to tee this up for you. The modern testing principles, which as we know, are not about testing and not really that modern. They're just around software delivery in a world where things are moving very, very quickly. These came about historically because Brent and I, 10 years ago now, were seeing changes happening in delivery that we saw the writing on the wall about what was going to happen with test rules. There were going these, at the time, Microsoft probably still had 10,000 testers when we started the podcast, or close to it. And we saw a world where testing could be owned by developers. Data from customer telemetry could substitute for a lot of testing, and the ability to get feedback very rapidly daily or up to hundreds of times a day meant that those large test teams probably weren't going to exist. And we were right, which is weird because Brent and I aren't that smart, but we were right. We saw the way software was delivered changing, and there are people that are good at testing who will always be gainfully employed because they can, one, apply that critical thinking and do, and I'm going to come back to critical thinking. They can help their teams. They can either by helping developers do better testing or by or helping people see the big picture or by doing some of that work themselves. That's always going to exist. The days of test teams that equal the size of dev teams focusing as a gate to release, they're gone. I mean, I know they still exist at some companies, but they're basically gone. Teams aren't delivering that way anymore. So way back when, I remember I read Ray Dalio's principles, and it came up with these modern testing principles that, again, aren't modern, aren't about testing. And we've tweaked them a little bit over time, but they're pretty much the same. We try to make them apply to the whole team. We wrote them originally like, here's how testers can think about surviving in this new world. So I'm not going to read them all, but one just came up in a LinkedIn discussion yesterday. Not even going to pick on the people, then I'm going to tell you where to find it. But it's one that's oddly controversial. Oddly controversial. It says, principle 5, we believe that the customer is the only one capable to judge and evaluate the quality of our product, which I'm not going to go edit this and get a beep out of here, but this one freaks people the F out. They go, oh my God, you're making the customer test our software. No, we're not. So Danny, you are one of the experts in the world I know of on the writing of Jerry Weinberg. What does Jerry Weinberg says quality is?
It's, let's see if I can get the wording right. Value to some person. Did I remember that right?
You did. And then some folks have even added value to some person that matters. I'm going to ask you both this question. It's rhetorical, but you can answer it anyway. If I'm building software for a customer, who matters the most? The customer.
How about that?
What I don't flippin' understand is why people who, the same people that added the who matters to this, and like this is a, to me, it just blows my mind, the people that tout themselves on critical thinking and blah, 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 and I hate to pick on them because I kind of don't care about their world very much. But when they flip out over, they call this principle irresponsible or whatever. And then yet in the same breath, they can say quality is value to some person that matters. The tester doesn't matter. I mean, I'm not saying testers don't matter. In this case, tester doesn't matter. Testers do good work. But it doesn't matter how well you've tested something. I gave a talk 15 years ago at a conference and said, testers don't care about, like, remember when software shipped in boxes? This was maybe 20 years ago. said, you don't put on the side 90% code coverage, 87% of the test passed, blah, blah, blah. No, they don't care about that. They care if it solves their problem. It brings them value because it's offers for them. They matter and it solved their problem. The tester certainly can help with all that. But to say that someone besides the customer is better able to evaluate quality, not really true. So I did want to soapbox that because I saw it last night. I thought of replying, and I do not engage in LinkedIn conversations. It is not worth the effort because some people on LinkedIn just, I mean, this is what I hate is when Twitter went away, Twitter went away. And
yeah, for me,
people started bringing all of their BS conversations to LinkedIn, and I'm not here for it. It's gross. Now I have to go to LinkedIn and see if there's any jobs available, but I'm actually finding all the good jobs are on Indeed and elsewhere, so I kind of stay away from LinkedIn. But I went there last night. I was bored. I was weak, and I fell into a trap. Thoughts?
I find good stuff on LinkedIn. I avoid the nonsense. I don't know about you.
How do you avoid the nonsense? Is there a nonsense filter I'm missing?
Well, I mean, you sense that it's nonsense, and then you scroll.
Soon as you start scrolling, you're lost, though, right?
I do make a point of who posted this because I might have to come back to their profile and find it again. So, yeah, there's that.
Do I mark where they work and mark it as a company I should never ever work at? I mean, what do I do? How do I, like, it is, it's bad. No,
you just,
I don't know. I don't really have a good answer.
If it's one of your connections and you really don't like what they said, then they need to not be a connection anymore, I suppose.
Yeah. I actually did that once a few weeks ago. I went and unconnected a whole bunch of people who were showing up in my feed and just pissing me off. I need to do more of that, but I'm going to ask you this. If I do that, am I just creating an echo chamber? Do I want to hear their dissenting opinions? So is an echo chamber bad?
Yes.
What do I do then? Help me solve my problem.
I see Lerming is gesturing. Sounds like you need to unmute.
Well, it depends, right? Like an echo chamber, if you want to set healthy boundaries, right? Nobody is saying no to healthy boundaries. Though if that's just a bubble you can't escape off, it's a different question.
I don't know. I'm really not that worried about it, but I feel like I should be on LinkedIn to kind of keep my eye on jobs, but I'm also not finding very many good jobs there. I like it when it gives me this is the thing I love about LinkedIn. Here's a job, and I click on the job. It says, you're not a good fit for this job. So why'd you even show it to me? God.
You should see some of the ones that says I'm a great fit for. No, LinkedIn. No.
Oh, yeah. I've seen those too. They've been wrong.
All right, here's the thing to look for. You want people with a different opinion than you have who is willing to have a rational discussion about it. That's the difference.
Yes. Yes. I wish, like on dating apps, they have like this match thing. I need to know, even if I disagree, I want to know I can have a rational discussion with you. I guess I have to filter that out. I don't, it's blah.
Yeah, there's even someone that we all like to talk trash about that if you have a private conversation with them, it's a rational conversation.
Yes, and I have experienced exactly that.
But I've told you, like, LinkedIn is just bait. It is just picking principle five and dumping on it.
It didn't used to be that way.
I think it was.
Okay, maybe like I just spent more time on LinkedIn because Twitter went away, and I used to spend time on Twitter. I think my account still exists. I haven't launched Twitter X, whatever it's called. Is that pronounced shitter with the X? I don't know. I haven't been on that platform in forever. I had to join Facebook last summer, and I have no friends on Facebook because that's the Trail Angels who are – we'll talk about them in a second here. That's the way to communicate with them is on Facebook. So I created a Facebook account. They maybe put a picture on there to prove I was real, but I have no friends. I've left all the groups I was in. I just need to delete my account. I deleted my original account from way back when years ago, but I created a new one, no friends. I obviously don't spend time there. I posted on Instagram about my hike this summer. So I scroll there sometimes, but I've kind of, it's weird. Maybe it's just because I was off the grid for so long. social media in general, including LinkedIn, like I can't scroll. I can scroll like two screens. That's enough. I'm done. It's weird though. I used to be able to watch TikTok for like a half hour straight. I know some people do longer, half hours. That's a long time for me. I can't even binge stuff on Netflix. I just can't sit that long. And I couldn't before. I especially can't now. I just have no patience for it. So instead, I take long walks and I'm in a good pace. I didn't think I'd be able to write every week when I got back because I couldn't write every week before I left. I was fried, but I can now.
Nice. So
go read. Anyway.
Yeah, so what else like do I know? Enough input to like write for a time. Like the best thing about like having this kind of job is getting more input to write about, right?
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is vast majority of my newsletters have been related to something happening at work. Something comes up. You know what? I'm going to write. It helps. One of the ways I process a lot just by talking through things. But if I can write about it, I can figure out what it means to me. And you'll notice a lot of my posts recently have just been about like things from the trail that are kind of retrospecting into my life. Like, oh, this made me think about this thing, or this thing on trail made me think about this thing, or this thing made me think about this thing on the trail. So eventually, and probably not very quickly, I'll run out of some of those ideas. And by then I'll probably have a job. So I guess I'll find some there.
Can I circle back to principle number 5 really quick? Because
this is the way this podcast goes, even with Brent. We just go in circles and circles and circles. Tell me what you don't like.
Well, you're supposed to be a good listener, which means you lose your train of thought, but then it comes back. So I'm working on being a better listener. Okay, so I believe the customer is the best person to judge and evaluate the quality of your product, but is often not the only one doing that. And I think that's why so many people don't like that statement. It's a bit of a hyperbole. And unless you're doing like production monitoring is your only testing, there are other opinions that matter. Aren't there?
And it seems easily to dispute, right? The customer is the only one capable. No, it isn't. Like there are multiple people capable, really, but maybe it's the one.
How are they capable?
And some might not. When you say like about security, how as a customer do I know that the security aspects of the software are really like as presented? I cannot really. But this doesn't mean the whole thing is irresponsible. It's the principle. It's how you deal with it, right? It's.
I'm going to let me push back on that. I'm not against this, and we can have I'm glad people have a rational conversation. But who else? Give me another person. Give me another persona that can evaluate the quality of our product.
I guess as maybe not the main expert, but expert tester, I could find things that the customer only glances at.
How do they know that the customer would care about that issue? I'm going to soapbox for a second here, because some of these folks will find, I'm going to air quote, bugs that no customer would ever care about. They're very excited about those. Lots of testers get really excited about, oh, I found this thing. And something Brent said a long time ago is, what is higher quality software? A software where there are no known bugs but has 100 users, or software that has dozens of bugs but used by tens of thousands of users? Which one brings more value? It's the second one. So how do we know that the expert tester is finding bugs that matter to the customer?
Some of them are obvious. It crashes every time you start it up in every environment. You don't need to ask the customer, is that bad? Should we fix it?
The customer wouldn't see that, right? And if he would, the customer would definitely say, hey, this is shit. I don't want that.
Yeah. Well, to me, and Eric Reese, I'm going to refer to Eric Reese, Lean Startup, you don't get any value from your engineering effort until it's in the hands of customers. You don't know if you've built the right thing to solve their problem. Obviously, and we can separate testing from quality. I don't really give a shit about testing anymore. I care about quality. Testing has to happen, but it's on the pursuit of quality, which is value to some person who matters, which I think is the customer. So if we put it that way, if we just are careless, and I'm going to refer once again to Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. I'll tell a story about that in a second. Robert Pirsig basically says quality and care are two sides of the same coin. So we're going to put care as a development team into our software. So it doesn't mean we're evaluating quality. We're going to put care into what we make and craftsmanship into what we make, but we don't know if it's quality, meaning value to some person, until the customer uses it.
Right. All you know is that it solves some problem, you think.
Yeah. You have a hypothesis that it solves a problem. So then you can put metrics and telemetry in place to see, are we solving the problem we're intending to solve with this software, with this release, with this API, whatever. But the customer, we don't know if it solves that problem until the customer uses it.
And when you say the quality of our product in that principle, people aren't thinking the quality product is one that solves the actual problem instead of a different problem. I think they're not even thinking about that at all, the way that's written.
How would you, well, I've been pushing back on the only one, because I do believe the customer, I still believe the customer ultimately, I mean, there's other quality things that can happen, but I'm bending a little bit, but I'm not bending. Because it doesn't matter if it doesn't solve the problem for the customer. But how would you, other than saying the best, which I don't think I like, I'm going to think about it though. How would you rewrite that principle?
It's the most important one to judge and evaluate. I don't know.
I'm going to think about it.
And I would maybe add a yes and. Like as we like enable, make our teams more capable, our goal could be to make the customers more capable of like actually deciding if this is like solving their problem in a good way or not, or like helping them understand the quality of the product for their needs or whatever. So it's not irresponsible because we don't just push it to the customer without any like without any care, without any quality, and without any feedback, right? Usually it's good for quality if we work close to the customer, get an interaction feedback loop, and they judge what we deliver. I get that, yeah.
Yeah, the feedback loops become critical there. If you can have a super fast feedback loop, I think what pushes people's buttons here, and this is probably partially on purpose, is that people read this principle and think, oh, you're making the customers test our software, which is true, but not true in the sense of like, here's your test cases, go enter these bug reports, blah, blah, blah. We have telemetry in place to help us understand how it's being used, what problems are being solved, what errors running into. We're looking into HTTP error logs. We have a lot of stuff we monitor to see if it's working as designed, functional correctness, and to see if it's solving that problem. Brent and I have talked quite a bit about having a hypothesis for every feature. Like, we expect that adding this feature will increase user acquisition by 20%. And before even releasing it, talking about the experiment, we're going to think about, what are we going to do if it does? What are we going to do if it doesn't? Do we double down? Do we try something different? Making every feature a hypothesis on what's going to change for the customer, so you can measure that. You can tell if you're solving a new problem, if it's getting better for the customer, something is changing. It's a lot of extra work. Development teams often fall into, wouldn't it be cool if we did this thing? And Microsoft is especially horrible at this. And I can tell you many stories from my time there. And I cannot stand Microsoft products anymore. But it was just as bad when I was there. So how do we make sure we're solving a real customer problem and not something that we think is cool or something we think will solve a customer problem? How do you do that without the customer? I'm seeing faces.
Yeah, dog fooding. But first suggestion is dog fooding. But then you are your own customer, basically. That doesn't help, really.
Yeah, and where you can dog food, if you can use your software to help make your software, always awesome. I've done that a ton at Microsoft, but working on operating systems especially, it's a great way because it's a proxy, but we're not the customer. Let me give you an example from Office. Way back, it's like Office 97, I think. And this is back in the years of 3-year ship cycles, and lots of beta testers. Lots of feedback. Fix the bugs. Beta testers all super happy. They ship it. A bunch of customers are pissed off. Because I think it was lawyers. They didn't have enough lawyers in the beta testing. Lawyers use Word differently than the way everybody else uses Word, and they were pissed off because a bunch of stuff didn't work right. So that's the same thing if you do your own testing. because you're dog fooding, it's great. You're finding a lot of the stuff. This is how I use it. You don't use it like the customer, because the customer will use your software differently. You need to think about all the different aspects. And when you're dealing with a million customers, data telemetry is the only way you can really do that. Rather than ship it, wait for bug reports to come in and then ship patches. Gross. Thank goodness we can ship multiple times a day now and detect these things and fix these things and figure this stuff out.
Last product I worked on was installed at the customer controlled environments, and that was weird. We didn't ship multiple times a day, and it definitely felt like a step back. But that still happens out
there. Yeah, it does. It does. And again, I think some of the folks who get angry over any of these principles, especially five, which we did not expect to be the most controversial, but I think it is.
Over years consistently, it's amazing.
I think there is a lot of software that is still shipping yearly. I don't ever want to work on that stuff. It is so much fun working on stuff that ships multiple times a day. I love detecting and fixing errors automatically within minutes. It's more exciting for me.
Yeah.
So as you do that, we had the listening to the podcast, reading my posts, recruiters. Yeah. 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 And then when Brian Finster was on, we talked about, and he said this a lot, and he's very active on LinkedIn as well. I like reading his posts because he's not afraid to engage with people on LinkedIn. But Brian said, like, the best way to find problems in your team is to try and do continuous deployment. Like, if I go to, we can't do that because that. Okay, we'll fix that. We still couldn't do it because of B. We'll go fix B. It's whether you do continuous deployment or not, doesn't matter. You don't have to. But if you talk about what it would take to do it, you're going to find all the bottlenecks and problems in your system.
Yeah.
Cool, man. All right, what else should we talk about? Do you want to talk about that some more? I could talk all day, as you can tell.
Well, there was just a recent DORA report was coming out, right, saying like fewer than once per 6 months deployment frequency is at 3.6%, they say here. So based on the...
If you're a recruiter at one of those companies, please do not contact me.
that's the folks that need you most, I thought.
No. Maybe. I got to think about this. So bringing a team from every 6 months to, well, there's stories about this. Like, I think Flickr was the one that went from like a very slow release to multiple times a day first. I guess I could. I don't know. If that was their desire, here's the difference. I figured it out. I don't want to go from A to A. If shipping every 6 months or less is that's the plan, that's the forever plan, hard pass. But yeah, if you're shipping once every 6 months and you want to ship 10 times a day, hell yeah. Let's go do that.
I'm trying to figure out, my testing past is calling me and I've kind of stepped away from it completely. But every time I talk to somebody about that topic, like my spidey senses say, oh yeah, this is cool. Get into this. I'm not going to go do a testing specialist job again, but I really should tap into that experience. So, if I could get, your leftovers, Alan, for transforming an organization or something, I don't know, but I really need to embrace that and help companies bridge that gap. Wherever they are in that journey.
Yeah.
But if they're not on a journey, if they're going A to A, I'm not going to be a cog in the wheel.
Exactly. Same exact boat. I can't do that again. I'm, as I think my LinkedIn profile says this, but Brent calls me a change agent, and I'm good at helping organizations make changes and figure out and finding all the things blocking them from doing it. I don't want to go from A to A. I don't want to hold the status quo. I don't want to be, you get it. So the good news is I will find a job eventually, and I know where all the really talented yet unemployed people are. So I will have open headcount. So I'll just bring y'all along for the ride.
Awesome. So the jobs you're looking for, Alan, they don't have 1,000 people applying for them, do they?
No, they don't. But a couple, 100, 200 sometimes.
No, they don't have 100 people applying for them. Not the job that you really need. And it's probably not posted on LinkedIn either.
Yeah, and I can almost guarantee the job I find won't be on a job board. It'll come from a network somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah, that's really most likely how it's going to happen.
Yeah, I knew that. I see where you're going now. But yeah, I'm going to apply because I need to shake the rust off. And I'm on an advisory board for a couple different tech companies. That's fun. It's free consulting. I have people reach out for more free consulting. I'm happy to do that because it kind of tickles my tech brain and gets my brain working again. I became pretty dumb on the trail. I forgot everything. It's coming back. It's been back. Just because all you do is you get up and you walk and you eat and you shit in the woods and do it again the next day. Yeah.
And now you get to build that knowledge back up with a better structure than before.
It is. And a clearer brain. I'm super excited because I know what I'm good at. I know I can do all the things I do, but what Zen Spy is there's all this, it kind of built on a lot of the therapy I've been in for years and years, but there's a buzz that happens, like just things you're worried about, stressors, anxiety, little things, they're all gone. They went away. I mean, they still come back once in a while, but when they're gone, you can tell. It's like if you're in a room and you think it's silent and you turn the lights off and this buzz you didn't even notice goes away. That's what happened in my head. And now I can hear when it comes back. I said, oh, that's wrong. Whereas I got to make that go away. And I can make it go away usually pretty quickly. So I'm trying to stay in this world where I'm happy, I'm confident, I'm clear on what I want to do. And I'm not going to do things that take me away from that, which would be a company that wants to go from A and stay at A forever. I am at my most effective when I can be me and push things forward and do all the wild, crazy things I do while creating engaged teams that kick ass. So that's my plan. Zen Spy Incorporated, maybe. I don't know. Zen Spy LLC. I'm not sure what it's going to look like.
I like it.
But we'll figure it out.
One little networking tip that I'm finding is it's not necessarily your really deep connections. It's very frequently someone that you've met maybe twice virtually. Those are the ones that are usually getting me interviews. So it's those fresh connections, oddly enough, are really valuable.
I'm going to keep an eye on that. I haven't really leveraged my network enough yet on this job search. And again, because it's a weird time, I'll reach out to them. I was, at one point, I was planning to head down to San Francisco for a bit later this year. I thought I would network a bunch of my old Unity colleagues who are both there and not there anymore. That trip's been pushed out a little bit, but I can still contact them virtually. I have one good thing about Unity's massive layoffs is I have former team members who like me a lot who are spread all over the tech industry. So yeah. I will begin reaching out to them and have them keep an ear out for me. I've done that a little bit already. I'll do some more of that, but we'll see what happens. I'm not super worried about it yet. I can even probably leave the yet off there. I'm not super worried about it because I know that I will find a job eventually, and I'm not going to settle for something like, oh, here's a job. I'm not going to go work for, Meta, for example. Never going to happen. Never going to happen. Not a fan. I kind of don't want to work at a super big company again. I think for me, I would love it if I could own engineering and a company had like between 200 and 800 or 1,000 engineers. I guess my sweet spot for culture change and pushing things along and not being in a cog in a machine, but having the ability to change culture and drive things. But we're going to see what happens. I'm repeating myself, but I think it
sounds exactly like the thing that everybody's telling like freelancers to do. Please put it online, put it on your service page. What kind of packages do you offer? What kind of jobs do you seek? Just get it online somehow. That will probably help. Maybe of like random people stumbling upon it, right? Just by, you say the organizations that might need you, hate you or whatever, or maybe not the person who are like, who wants to take care and wants to make quality matter might be looking, might stumble just by Googling upon Substack posts or whatever, right?
We need to start a Slack channel called Help Spy Find a Job. Spy John.
If you need that
and,
show.
And you can all that. Give me your tips on, because I'm, you know, the newsletters are on angryweasel.substack.com. I still have angryweasel.com. Fire for Friday, which I did for like 3 years straight, maybe four. Ugh. I think I'm going to be done with those.
Oh, wow.
So I don't think so. I've sort of lost my momentum towards the end. I get them every week, but
I got to say it was a highlight of my week when I showed up in one of them. Like, oh, yes. Wow.
Now maybe I have to do them again. I am not on the internet that much. Maybe when I get back to reading, I'm reading books instead of internet things. Maybe when I get back into the swing of things a little more, that'll come back. But then the question I was getting to is, where do I put this information? On angryweasel.com. It's not on a separate page. I put it on the Substack somewhere. I got to figure out what information I want to share, where I put it, and how I get people to find it.
So my network, and again, this is a fresh contact, introduced me to one person who introduced me to somebody they knew, who gave me an opportunity with her network to be listed as a service provider among startups. And I'm looking at this form that I fill out to get on this list, and it asks, what do you do? And I do a lot of things. I don't know what to put there because it's got to sound organized and focused, but yeah. You know, it's tough being a generalist, damn it.
I think so. I think I can get pretty specific at what I do. And again, maybe starting off at a consultant role or a fractional CTO, fractional VPE is a better path for me. I'm kind of six of one, half of the other right now. I've always thought I'd do consulting at some point in my career, whether it's now and then into full-time, or they do full-time and then do some. Even when I stop working, I can't just go to the gym, play pickleball every day. I'll get a little bored. I need to exercise my brain. So let's say I get a job I love. I do it for a couple of years. And I tend to not just quit jobs. I quit when I'm not needed anymore. I've worked myself out of almost every job I've been in, except for the last one where I hiked myself out of it. And I will probably do that again. I will find myself in a position where I don't need to be there. At that point, I'll probably go into consulting. I'm not going to do full-time work for a lot longer. I like it, but I also like traveling and hiking and playing pickleball with the retirees. And I guess technically I'd be a retiree, but I don't know. I'll just say I'm a lot younger than the folks I'm playing pickleball with.
Man, I look back over this period I've been unemployed and thought, man, if I had known all of that, all those efforts to find a job wouldn't have succeeded, I would have traveled. And I thought, wait, traveling costs money. Dang it.
It does. Well, it does. It's not free for sure, but there are cheaper places to travel and you can make it work. So yeah. And I'll figure it out. That was good talking about that though. And you guys, we'll start some Slack conversations. You go to moderntesting.org and get a link to our Slack group, one of the three. And if you want to help me, I'll create a channel, help, you know, spy jobs. And you can all give me tips on how to find the job I'm looking for. But really, I haven't tried that hard yet. So I'm not terribly worried about it.
I'd hire you as a consultant in an instant. So,
well, I got, that's what I need. Somebody who actually has pocketbooks to tell me.
Yeah. Al, you can't leave us today without giving
Danny,
us
a Danny,
trail
how much
story.
Can you afford?
I'll let you know when I get the job and the budget. So help all me get right. a job well, too.
Yeah. But yeah, it's fun though.
Alan, so you have overall, to tell us, you have to tell us a trail story before you go. I know you're trying to wrap up. We have to hear a juicy trail story.
Well, I mean, there's like 10,000. It's like when people ask, how was the hike? It was 4.5 months and I walked 2,655 miles, not including side trips. We'll call it 3,000. How was it?
That's not what I'm asking. How was like 10 minutes of that hike that was really exciting?
It's all exciting in its own way. So let me just kind of, I'll give you the overview and then listeners, if you want me to dive into any of this, let me know. This might take a while. The Pacific Crest Trail is in five sections. So I'll go one by one. The desert starts at the Mexican border, goes up to roughly where the Sierra began in California. So south of the Bay Area. Blew my mind how beautiful the sunsets were. I had never seen a desert sunset before. I don't think I'd seen a cactus bloom before. So I spent, you know, a solid month and a half walking through the desert. Just, I thought I would hate it. It was beautiful. It was incredible. A great way to, not huge hill. Thought it was great. Hit the Sierra on May 31st. And still a lot of snow. I did probably some of my dumbest hiking. I was hiking by myself through there's people around. I didn't hike with people. And probably the dumbest thing I did, and this is, I wrote about this in one of my recent newsletters, is I decided I was going to glissade down this hill, which ended up being solid ice. It was a dumb, dumb choice. Somebody broke their leg there the day before. I didn't know that. I know what I'm doing. Instincts took over. I bailed out. I was fine. But I spent the rest of the day thinking about how stupid I was to even try that. So, you know, a week later, I'm walking across these waist deep rapids by myself. Also stupid, but, I had one choice. One is to either keep going and make it across, which was choice A, or choice B, which was die. So I chose A, which was good, but you know, probably having a spotter there to call. I'm not sure what the spotter would have done because I'd have been washed down the river. They could have, you know, called the SOS and got me dragged out downstream. I don't know. But overall fun, a lot of, incredible beauty, but walking in snow every day, almost all day for a month was a little tiring after a while. You get to the Sierra, you go, oh my God, the waterfalls are so beautiful. The mountain lakes are so great. 3 weeks later, you go, oh great, another lake, another waterfall, more snow. Northern California starts around Tahoe up to the Oregon border. The worst maintained part of trail you're hiking over, it was hot, it was ashy from there's a major forest fires there in the past. And that's where Zen Spy was born. Because I got so deep into my head to not think about how miserable the trail was that I solved every single problem I didn't even know I had yet in my head. Then I got to Oregon, took a bunch of days off in Ashland to see some plays, and then started trekking through Oregon. I smashed my ankle on my first day out of Ashland, so about 15 miles into Oregon. A long story. A rock flipped up and bashed my ankle. It's still not right yet. I woke up the next morning, ankle was swollen. So I did what any through hiker does. I only walked 15 miles that day, elevated my leg. I woke up the next morning, it was a little better. So I only walked 15 miles again. And then it kept on getting a little better. I did 22 the next day. Ended up doing my biggest day at all in Oregon, hiked 33 miles one day, but basically went across Oregon in about 20 days. Oregon's a little flatter, cruised across. My ankle healed as I walked on it. It's still not healed. I had it looked at once. Said, come back if it doesn't get better. If you're not walking on it so much, I need to go back because even today, just I went for a little run. It's like it's tweaked. It's screwed up. But Oregon was a blast. Met another hiker in Crater Lake who ended up hiking the last 800 miles of the trail together. Incredible person. Still good friends today. Hit Washington and it's like, oh my God, I'm home. But it's so far to go. Washington is so much harder than Oregon. The ups and downs are so much. But cruised along. My son, who we called Spy Kid, is 21 years old, hiked from Snoqualmie Pass to Stevens Pass. That's just a 70-mile stretch, but more up and down per miles than anywhere else on the trail, I think. He was a little beat up, a little complaining towards the end, but he made it through. Pushed him pretty hard. And then pushed all the way to the border. And it was a little surreal getting to the finishing because you're just walking every day and all of a sudden you're done, but you're not totally done because you have to turn around and walk 30 miles backward to get home because you can't walk into Canada anymore because stuff. And then it didn't really sit in that I was done.
It's hard right to handle. Away.
It is. And I'll tell you, coming back was, there is a real thing called post-trail depression, which, still comes and goes, but the first week back was overwhelming. I went 4.5 months where everything I needed to live fit in a backpack, a small backpack. Even if I stayed in a hotel for the night, all my stuff still fit into a backpack. And then I come home and there's just all this stuff everywhere. And I didn't know like what to do with it. I purged a lot of it. I have more to get rid of. I can't handle having stuff. Like even I have like lots of books on testing and leadership and software development. Most of them on leadership. I don't want them anymore. If I knew someone locally who wanted the books, I just like, if anybody's in the Seattle area, you want a bunch of books on leadership, let me know. I'll give them all to you.
I'm a sucker for books. That's the hardest thing for me to get rid of, as you can see.
Yeah, I don't want them. I don't want things. I don't want my things anymore. A lot of my clothes don't fit anymore because I lost about 25 pounds on the trail. It's like, but I didn't like them anymore. I got rid of a bunch of my clothes. I got rid of a bunch of just stuff. And I continue to purge every day, either throwing stuff away or like I have no desire at all to have collections. I don't have any big collections, but I just don't want things. So that's a little one thing that really hit home. And even some, you hear this a lot of times in self-help or retirement books, is you want to have experiences, not things. And that's become like super true for me since I've been back. I don't give a crap about things. I want to have experiences. Like I got a note from a friend of mine from Trail sent me a note saying I can get a completion certificate for the PCT. And I made a digital one and printed
it out. Thing.
You guys can see it. It looks like that. So, but I'll probably just put this in, I'll look at this, put it in the recycle bin because I don't want it. I had the experience of hiking the PCT. My internet's a little freaky. It'll work out fine. I had the experience of hiking the PCT. I don't need a thing about it. I want to spend my money on travel and classes or things I can learn and do. I really don't want to buy cars or books or, I mean, I'll read books on my Kindle. They're small, but I don't, yeah, I think it's probably pretty common, but it's weird. It's weird being back, but I'm back now. And, I will probably do some more hiking this summer. And I'm going to assume the recording will work fine here, but my guests are frozen because my network has puked for some reason.
I hear you, but your video's not moving. So
I will keep talking.
Yeah.
And because I like to say goodbye to them before we end up here.
You don't hear me, huh?
What's going on? Danny Andreas, if you can ever hear me, please say something.
Do you know how to sing the closing riff, or maybe he recorded it on his?
No, I don't. But yeah, it was fun. It was nice seeing you. And,
oh, you can still hear me. They're telling me they can still hear me.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I don't know what's going on and why they're broken. I'm afraid to refresh my page. So, oh, that's weird. Danny can hear things. Oh, you know what? I'll actually do a little bit of editing. If you can hear yourselves, that means your recordings will upload. So pretend that I can hear you and we can wrap up here. So Dan, I can't ask an open-ended question because I won't know when you're done. So I would like to thank both Danny and Andreas, Global Warming. Well, it depends
Warming,
on the German accent. I want to thank you both for for being here. So let me start with you, Andreas. Any final words?
It was much fun seeing you and having a chance to get another episode out. Love that.
All right. And how about you, Danny? Thank you for that.
Oh, this was a thrill. I've been trying to get on the podcast for a long time. Not very hard, but finally I tried. And one thing I'll leave you with, if you go to my blog, swalchemist.blog, you will actually find, if you scroll long enough, a picture of a cactus bloom. So there's that. But you have to do a lot of scrolling to find it. So thanks, everybody. Really enjoyed it.
All right. This has been episode 220 of the AB Testing Show. I am going to shove in the outro post prob because Riverside is still screwing up on my side. Darn it, I'll have to do some more editing. But thank you both. We'll see you next time on AB Testing.